Philadelphia has one weekend left to spruce up before the stars of the Democratic Party arrive in town next week. I'm Dave Heller, and this is Newsworks Tonight. While party faithful are waiting with bated breath, area residents with less skin in the game had a range of reactions to the coming week.
Well, I was excited until the car shortage on regional rail happened. Now I'm like, I really hope my commute isn't impacted.
I'm really excited about it. I love Bernie. I tried to volunteer and they wouldn't let me, and now I'm sad.
I hope Hillary wins. I'm going to rally for Hillary. Yes, I am.
I'm getting out of Philadelphia. I don't want to be here. There's a lot of protests. Things are heated.
It's just going to be exciting, and I just want to see, like, maybe Broad Street and a decor and how they've paved the streets.
I try to ignore all the news of it. I'm not politically involved, and I plan on leaving the country pretty soon. I plan to avoid Center City. I just don't like crowds. I don't like congestion, and I have work to do.
That was Justin Kratz, Abigail Leedy, Desiree Green, Lauren Abramson, Martina Davis, and Joe Morton. There's one group that's definitely paying attention during the DNC, taxi drivers. Earlier this month, Philadelphia cabbies pledged to create chaos as a way of protesting Uber during the convention. Now they've backed off that promise. As WHYY's Bobby Allen reports, a broad coalition of groups is now focusing on winning a court fight rather than staging a street fight.
Taxi drivers and disabled activists went to court today with high hopes. They weren't happy with a deal struck between the Philadelphia Parking Authority and Uber, allowing the ride-hailing company to operate legally for 90 days. It was a short-term compromise, also backed by state lawmakers. Judge Linda Carpenter says the deal might be flawed, but she can't rule on it until after the 90-day reprieve. So she scheduled a new hearing for October.
And the judge has problems with this agreement between the PPA and Uber that violates the civil rights of people with disabilities and creates an unlevel playing field between two classes of workers.
Ronald Blount heads the Taxi Workers Alliance of Pennsylvania. He says Uber ought to be regulated like a taxi company. Matthew Clark, with Taxis for All Philadelphia, is pushing Uber to accommodate riders in wheelchairs. He says the deal with the parking authority needs scrutiny.
The PPA can't make rulings like this that affect the public without including the public in the discussions. And so we're going to make sure the public is present for this discussion and let them know that we aren't going to take this anymore.
PPA leaders have previously called Uber a hack company operating in the shadows of the law. But given the DNC and SEPTA's regional rail woes, they say it's in the public's interest to give Uber a little break. Both sides will meet again this fall when the 90-day law ends. Until then, taxi leaders say no strikes are slated because they think it might distract from the legal fight. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
New Jersey Senate and Assembly leaders say they've found a compromise to refill the Transportation Trust Fund, which is running on fumes. Senate President Steve Sweeney says it would raise the gas tax 23 cents per gallon, while offering deductions and tax cuts to offset higher gas prices.
Up to $500 on the state gas taxes paid for all New Jersey motorists with an income up to $100,000, and that's about $20 million. We have taken out the charitable giving component, and we've moved up the phase out of the estate tax.
The proposal would also boost the earned income tax credit, raise the tax exemption on retirement and pension income, as well as offering a tax break for veterans. Although Assembly Speaker Vinny Prieto supports the plan, Sweeney says he does not have Governor Chris Christie on board.
I'm not going to rule out the governor on this. Do I expect him to accept it right now? No. But let's see what happens when the legislature passes it in both houses.
The Senate Budget and Appropriations Committee is set to vote on the plan August 1st. Non-emergency projects funded by the TTF were frozen by Governor Christie until new funding can be secured. Nearly half of the Democratic delegations pouring into Philadelphia this weekend will not actually be staying in the city. Representatives of 25 states and territories from Alabama to Guam will crash in hotels across suburban Pennsylvania. WHYY's Laura Benchoff reports the event is an especially big boon for Montgomery County.
Late last year, the Democratic National Convention Committee awarded contracts to 26 hotels around the region, including 10 in Montgomery County. To preempt any fear of missing out among the delegates staying outside the city, the county's tourism board put together a highlight reel of area attractions, set to a little John Mellencamp.
Come to the park to enjoy a tour by trolley, by car, hiking, or biking.
Valley Forge National Park Superintendent Pat Madden, dressed in his park ranger duds, shows off the area's revolutionary history. Meanwhile, Tourism Board CEO Mike Bowman, in a black suit, has one message for delegates. Hit them all.
Did I mention all the amazing shopping here in Montgomery County?
Dave Miranda, who works for the North Carolina delegation, is staying with that state's 141 delegates in Lansdale. He says he won't have much time to kill sightseeing, although the delegates might.
So you know, I imagine my day will start at about 7:30. I mean, start working at about 7:30 each day. And, yeah, probably run through Gabel at 10 or 11 o'clock at night.
To reduce delegates' headaches on the Schuylkill Expressway, the convention's transportation committee arranged shuttle buses from hotels to the Wells Fargo Center, as well as to suburban transit stops. Bowman says the sheer number of people staying in the region will be record-breaking.
We're going to have a record July revenue month for Montgomery County.
As a result of their partnership with the DNC, hotels across Montgomery County are booked at 83% of their capacity for the coming week. Measured by hotel rooms, the convention is an even bigger draw for Montgomery County than Pope Francis. Laura Benchoff, WHYY News.
The big question next week is whether the party will unite around presumptive nominee Hillary Clinton or whether supporters of her rival Bernie Sanders will buck the party line. WHYY's Katie Colinari reports on what Sanders delegates in our region are saying.
Kat Richter is showing me her Bernie crowns. They're headbands decorated with colored tissue paper and Bernie spelled out in sparkly gold letters.
This is actually one, I made this one to wear for Mardi Gras. We were having,
Richter is a delegate for Bernie Sanders at next week's Democratic National Convention, which will take place just a few blocks from her house in South Philly. She's still planning to wear her Bernie crown, even though her candidate recently endorsed Hillary Clinton. All eyes are going to be on people like Richter to see whether they're ready to fall in line or if they're going to challenge the nominee, just as some Republicans did at their convention in Cleveland this week. In fact, Richter has gotten a couple of phone calls from Clinton delegates asking where she stands.
And they all sound really nervous when they're calling us. I think the, you know, the campaign has asked them to do this. And so I think there's some fear still on her campaign's part.
So what does she say to them?
Well, I'm definitely not voting for Trump. I know that much. So
Richter is not planning to skip the ballot box either, but she's not sure yet whether she can vote for Clinton. For many other Sanders delegates, it's a no-brainer.
We have to unify.
Bill Leopold is a Sanders supporter from Montgomery County who says he's ready to stand behind Clinton at next week's convention, in part because of his experience as a young liberal activist.
Yeah, I was, I guess, what one might call a long-haired hippie, or my kids would call that back in the 60s. I certainly had long hair.
Sporting that hairdo, Leopold cut class in high school to protest the Vietnam War and campaign for anti-war candidate Eugene McCarthy. Many compare Sanders to McCarthy, their outsider status, their appeal to young progressives, and ability to draw large crowds. But unlike Sanders, McCarthy refused to endorse his opponent, Hubert Humphrey, before the Democratic National Convention. And the 1968 DNC in Chicago was marked by violent clashes between police and anti-war protesters. The whole world was watching. Leopold says it still is, and he blames a divided Democratic Party for putting Republican Richard Nixon in the White House. Leopold says the stakes are just as high in 2016.
We can't afford to be the laughingstock. We can't afford to have retrogression and all the rights that everyone's pushed for so long. So we have to unify.
But he acknowledges some of his counterparts have a different idea of what that means, especially younger delegates like Amanda McElmurray.
I believe in people unity, not party unity. I think the people in themselves should unify for a common good so that everybody has a decent quality of life.
Like Leopold in the 1960s, McElmurray is an activist. She was one of six people arrested this week during a rally calling on the DNC host committee to release donor information. While she's accepted Bernie Sanders won't be on the ballot in November, McElmurray does have a plan to take action on issues she cares about, like raising the minimum wage, although she won't say exactly how she's planning to make her voice heard on the convention floor. McElmurray says she's not looking to stir up chaos.
I think that it takes all of us working from the outside, like knocking on the doors, and people from the inside opening up those small windows.
She says she just wants to get her message across while the party elites are watching. Katie Colinari, WHYY News.
Still ahead this evening, for 16 years, an intricate sculpted fountain lay hidden away in a police parking lot. Now, it's being resurrected on the grounds of the Woodmere Art Museum.
It's a natural, organic form. In the green environment of Woodmere, it speaks to the elements of the sky, the clouds, the trees.
NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY. Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. During his press conference at the White House with Mexico's president this afternoon, President Barack Obama noted that a, quote, version of America on the verge of collapse, a vision of violence and chaos everywhere, doesn't jibe with the perceptions of most people. The president was referring to what he assesses to be the version and vision of Donald Trump. Let's run that version past Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Well, the key is, how does the public respond to what they made of Donald Trump's acceptance speech last night?
We've kind of taken it point by point. Let me give you one example where the public would agree, and this is kind of a no-brainer, but he says, I will outline reforms to add millions of new jobs. It's a nice promise. How it's going to happen, of course, is a different thing.
How about specifically what the president was touching on, a vision of violence and chaos?
Well, Donald Trump used the word crisis in the first few paragraphs of his speech. 17% of Americans are satisfied with the way things are going in the U.S., and that's down significantly, the lowest we've seen it going back to the fall of 2013 when we had a government shutdown. So clearly Americans aren't happy. I'm not sure if the public would define that as a crisis. Crime, we just don't see it. We just updated our most important problem facing the country question, which we do every month, and we certainly saw an increased mention of things relating to race and the incidents we've been seeing, some increase in people talking about crime, but that's still down at around 6%. And this is just as of a week or so ago.
So what are some other areas where Trump's speech resonated?
Well, I'll give you an example, infrastructure. He said, we will build the roads, highways, bridges, tunnels, airports, and the railroads of tomorrow. Well, we know when we test these things, spending more federal money on infrastructure, that's how we phrased it, it does score very high with the American public. Also, he said and talked about the rigged system. By the way, Bernie Sanders talked a lot about that as well. Special interests have rigged our political and economic system for their benefit. That resonates with the public, particularly when it comes to Congress. The average American overwhelmingly thinks that members of Congress respond to special interest in those with money rather than their constituents.
Frank, since we spoke last, Donald Trump has selected Mike Pence to serve on his ticket. Now, we'll talk about Pence in a moment, but one point on which Pence and Trump seem to disagree is on the notion of trade and trade agreements. Of course, Trump says he's prepared to rip up the existing ones and start anew.
That's one of those areas, Dave, where Trump was out of sync with the American public. We've looked at it several different ways, and the average American actually thinks that trade promotes more economic opportunities for Americans and jobs than it does costing jobs. We've also asked specifically about trade treaties and abrogating those or getting back from them. We don't find a lot of support for that, so the public kind of thinks trade is more positive than negative.
Newt Gingrich and Chris Christie did not make the final cut. Put Pence in context of previous vice presidential picks.
Well, the key thing that we know about Mike Pence is that nobody knows about Mike Pence. How's that? I say nobody. We ask right after he was selected last weekend, what do you think? 21 favorable, 18 unfavorable. Do the math there, Dave. That's about 40%. That leaves about 60% who don't know who he is or don't even have an opinion of him. The only other vice presidential candidate that we have tracked with that much of an unknown factor was Sarah Palin back in 2008. She had about 70% who didn't know who she was.
Frank, let's park the presidential wannabes to the side for a moment. What's President Barack Obama's approval rating?
Well, his last quarter in office, which was his 30th quarter. How's that? He only has two quarters to go. His average approval rating was 51% in his 30th quarter in office, which is pretty good. That's up. It had been as low as 41, a little more than 41 some quarters ago. So if you look at the graph, Obama's approval rating has been picking up recently rather than going down. And Dave, in that sense, he's following the pathway of Ronald Reagan. back in 1988, which was Ronald Reagan's last year in office, his approval rating, which was about the same as Obama's, was also picking up. It was about 50-51%. Now, what the Democrats are hoping, of course, is that that bodes well for the success of their candidate, because George H.W. Bush went on and retained the White House back there in 88. And, of course, Democrats are hoping Obama's higher approval rating means that Hillary Clinton has a better chance of retaining the White House in this fall's election.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight. A West Philadelphia public fountain that was hidden for 16 years has just been relocated to Philadelphia's Chestnut Hill neighborhood. Though it will be quite a while before the water flows again in the sculpted fountain by artist Harry Bertoia. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports.
In 1967, the city of Philadelphia commissioned Harry Bertoia to make a fountain for the old Civic Center building in University City. Many years later, in 2000, as that site was being demolished, the 4 tons of copper and bronze was spirited away to a secret location. That location was the parking lot of a police maintenance garage in North Philadelphia, hidden inside a custom-built shed. Even the people who worked there didn't know the sculpture was on site. Margot Berg of the city's Office of Arts and Culture wanted to keep the sculpture safe because they don't make them like that anymore.
It's difficult for the city of Philadelphia to create new fountains. It's hard to maintain fountains within city parks and city landscape. And just the size of it, like where would we site it? It was a difficult thing to find a new home for.
The fountain sat there for 16 years. It's called Free Interpretation of Plant Forms, a huge abstraction of a flower. Berg found a partner in the Woodmere Art Museum in the Chestnut Hill neighborhood, nestled between Fairmount Park and the Morris Arboretum. Woodmere's director, William Valerio, says Bertoia's natural forms are a natural fit.
Woodmere was founded by a man, Charles Knox Smith, who believed art and nature is a path to God. And we might not use those words today, but I think we believe it's basically right that art is a spiritual experience and nature is a spiritual experience, and bringing them together can do something profound for the soul.
The original location of this fountain at the Civic Center was in a windswept concrete pool surrounded by masonry buildings. In some ways, it was not ideal for this piece. It was sprayed on all sides by high-pressured fountain jets.
You had this beautiful, intimate piece of bronze, copper, but you couldn't actually get to it.
That is Matthew Baird. He's the architect of Woodmere's master plan.
And actually, Bertoia was never very keen on that. You know, there's this delicate plant form that he's made, and the last thing you do to a little seedling is barrage it with a high-pressure hose.
At Woodmere, the fountain is now in the middle of an expansive lawn ringed by trees. Water will emerge from the center of the fountain, flow over the petals, and drip into a gravel bed. There is no pool, so visitors will be able to walk directly up to the sculpture and touch it. The sculpture is in place, but it needs to be cleaned and repaired. It's expected to become active in late fall. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
As the election draws near, finding common ground is not getting any easier. Researchers in Ireland and the UK believe that when people are bored, their political views become more extreme. From WHYY's Behavioral Health Desk, Anne Hoffman reports.
Feeling bored, although a passing state, can be frustrating. It can also inspire people to search for more meaning in their lives. One way to feel more fulfilled is to double down on one's political views, says lead researcher Vinan van Tilburg from King's College London. He and his colleagues had one group of people copy references to literature about concrete. Pretty boring, right?
And they had to do this over and over and over again. So in this particular condition, we really made people extremely bored.
What they found was that people who usually considered themselves somewhat liberal became very liberal after that task. The same was true for conservatives. Van Tilburg says people's beliefs just intensified. Keep in mind, the research didn't focus on hyper-extreme views. It's more about a shift in one's own prior political orientation. Of course, boredom is just one factor among many that can contribute to that process.
By no means is boredom the only or even the primary reason why people may radicalize.
So don't go thinking that the best way to get out of a political argument during the upcoming DNC is to simply give your sparring partner a good book to read. Though it might be worth a try. Anne Hoffman, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader, with additional production this week from Ty Johnson. We had help this week from our intern, Edward Saakashvili. Our news director is Eugene Son. At the controls this week, Al Banks and Diana Martinez. John Mussoni is acting vice president of news and civic dialogue. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.